This is part two of my trade deadline countdown podcast, where I bring on the amazing Ariel Helwani from Uncrowned and Yahoo Sports to discuss his New York Knicks. And before that, Rockets podcaster Roosh Williams joins to discuss the All-Star Reserve announcements and Houston's plans with 1 week until the trade deadline. Be sure to listen to part one, though. That was posted on Thursday, in which I shared my latest reporting on Golden State's pursuit of Jimmy Butler. And then Tom Haverstraw and I discussed Fox and the Kings, tanking teams, and teams that need to make a trade. Part two with Ariel and Roosh coming up next. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. Joining me now is Roosh Williams to discuss the All-Star Reserve's announcements and the Houston Rockets. What's up, Roosh?
Hey, man. Happy to be here. Thank you for having me. Excited to talk a little bit of Rockets, even though we're coming off of a devastating L. So let's do it.
It was a tough loss against Memphis. We'll talk about that a little bit later. First, let's talk about the NBA All-Star Reserves, which were announced on Thursday night. Let's begin in the East. We already know the starters: Jalen Brunson, Donovan Mitchell, Jason Tatum, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Karl-Anthony Towns. The reserves were named: Jaylen Brown, Cade Cunningham, Darius Garland, Tyler Hero, Damian Lillard, Evan Mobley, and Pascal Siakam. So of them, Cade, Garland, Dame, Mobley, Siakam, to me, I think they're all no-brainer selections, no arguments there on my end. Hero, I can see why some people have some issues there. I get the disagreement, but he's 24-5-5 on excellent efficiency, missed only one game. The Jaylen Brown choice, Roosh, that one's puzzling to me. Yes, he's averaging 23-6-5, good counting stats, but he's posting career-worst scoring efficiency, has not been his same lockdown guy on defense like we've seen he can be in a postseason setting, and he's one of the key reasons why there's a lot of concern over Boston's chances of actually repeating. So I'd have five players that I'd take over Brown as an all-star: LaMelo Ball, Trae Young, Jared Allen, Tyrese Maxey, and Josh Hart, who I talk about later in the podcast with Ariel Helwani. Roosh, am I crazy to have five guys ahead of Jaylen Brown? A little bit?
A little bit. This is why. So I'm a little old school, all right? Winning matters to me. It might not matter as much to other people. I think we're at a stage where, especially with the guys like Hero, right, over Trae Young, for example, like the winning aspect, they kind of cancel each other out. I'm okay with Tyler Hero over Trae Young because Trae Young is having the least efficient season of his career since his rookie season. But with Jaylen Brown, I mean, what, top three team in the East, defending champion, so they're going to get that little, like, kind of inherent boost, right, just from the credibility and from the fact that obviously they are the defending champion. So I'm okay with Jaylen Brown. He's got his reputation as a winning basketball player. So it's kind of like one of those reputational picks, you know? So
why does reputation matter? Why does it matter? I don't care what you did before this season. All that matters is the 2024-25 season. Well, that's all that matters to me.
The names that you listed, though, like, is LaMelo balling out? Absolutely. Is Tyrese Maxey balling out? Absolutely. Are both of their teams in the lottery? Absolutely, right? So for me, like, when we're talking awesome stats, lotto, it gets tough for me. I like, winning has to matter somewhat. So if we're boiling it down to LaMelo's putting up crazy numbers, but, you know, and I get it, right? The Hornets have been hurt. They have different reasons for why. It's not LaMelo's fault. But at the end of the day, you got to reward winning. Jared Allen would be a good pick, right? Cleveland, number one seed, excellent defensively, has the cachet, has been an all-star in the past. So I could live with the, you know, Jared Allen being the pick over Jaylen Brown. I'd have to look at, I mean, don't they like distinguish with the wings and bigs and all that? Yeah, so maybe it came down to that, right?
Silliness which there is, with positions, front court, back
which
court
is stupid,
and all that.
Like, right?
some like guard, like Jaylen Brown is a guard, Tatum's a four, and it's like, I don't know how they determine backcourt versus front court with some of these decisions, but that's beyond me.
Who are your other two? It was LaMelo, Tyrese Maxey, Jared Allen.
For my snubs, LaMelo Ball, Trae Young, Jared Allen, Tyrese Maxey, and Josh Hart. Josh Hart is an unorthodox suggestion as an all-star, but he's just beyond the box score level guy. Nearly 10 rebounds per game as a 6'4" guard, elite defender, tone setter, shooting very, really well from the floor, versatile player. He screens, he does everything. He's an unorthodox guy, so I'm not surprised he wasn't picked. And I'm not surprised Jared Allen wasn't picked because he'd be a fourth all-star. There's only 12 spots in the East and 12 spots in the West, so the Cavs would have had a third of the roster because they already have Mitchell and Garland and Mobley.
And shout out to Garland, by the way.
Yes.
I'm happy to see that.
Bounce back
not
here,
to switch
man.
Gears on you, but you know, a lot of times or a lot of the discourse has kind of like since Donovan Mitchell arrived in Cleveland, I feel like Darius Garland has been relatively forgotten. And people forget how freaking good he was before Donovan Mitchell came. So to see them be the all-star backcourt together is very cool.
Very happy to see Garland make it after last season when he had the jaw injury, bounce back year for him. Trae Young, another year of not making it. He posted on X on Thursday night. It's no longer getting snubbed. It's getting trade at this point with a crying laughy emoji. He said, sorry to my fans. It'll change eventually. All right. Talk soon. Trae's disappointed. Clearly.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's hard. I mean, 20 and 11 plus, right? Like it's, he's got to feel snubbed. And he's on a team where he's got to, you know, shoulder the load, right? So I feel his pain. But we're at a point in the NBA where there's just a lot of talent. And someone, unfortunately, someone's got to get left out, right? So Hawks aren't having a great season. And so when that kind of happens, and Trae, you know, he's a one-way player, right, for the most part. So maybe that hurts him somewhat. But, yeah, sucks that he gets snubbed.
I mean, look, I think you nailed it right there. It's a deep league and – to me, these rosters should be expanded at this point. Like the NBA is willing to be switching up the game. They have a draft 1 year and then they have conferences the other year. Now they're starting out with the All-Star tournament where they're going to have four teams of eight players each. The 24 players selected the All-Star team are going to split into three teams and they have the team that wins the G League tournament. Why not just expand the NBA rosters to 32 and have four rosters of eight each? Expand the roster.
Cut the quarters down to 10 minutes each. Just kidding.
Start the games on time.
Right? Yeah, my God. Cut down reviews. You know, there's so many changes to make. I felt like Adam Silver at times is just throwing stuff against the wall to see what sticks. But yeah, I mean, look, hey, you want to talk snubs. The East had some, maybe. The West is, I mean, how do you pick 15 All-Stars out of the West?
Well, let's lay out the West then. And the starters we already know. Stephen Curry, SGA, LeBron, Kevin Durant, Nikola Jokic. The reserves were announced. Anthony Davis, Anthony Edwards, James Harden, Jaren Jackson Jr., Alperen Şengün, Victor Wembanyama, Jalen Williams. I think AD, Wemby, Edwards of the reserves, locks. Triple J, there was a lot of pushback against him on social media, but he's an elite defender, plays a critical role on that Memphis offense. I have no issues there. Harden, Şengün, and Williams to me are the most arguable guys on that list. I posted on X for some snubs, and the names most cited were Kyrie Irving, Domantas Sabonis, Norm Powell, Devin Booker. Those are that's a handful of the names most people responded with. I think the strongest case is for Kyrie. It's a bonus as the biggest stub there. I mean, Kyrie, he's carrying this Mavs team with Luka missing over half the season so far. They have a +2 net rating with Kyrie on the floor without Luka. He's at 24-5-5 on 60% true shooting. On Synergy Sports, 95th percentile in pick and roll scoring, 87th percentile in ISO scoring, 91st percentile in spot ups. He's dominating in so many different facets of the game. I would have had Kyrie on the roster over Jalen Williams and Harden. What do you think about that? And who's the biggest snub in your eyes?
Yeah, it's Kyrie. I would have put Kyrie probably over Jalen Williams. Like you said, I'm okay with Triple J. John Morant's missed a good amount of games, right? And so he's still got Memphis in the mix, two-way player. So I'm okay with Triple J. I'm very much okay with Alperen Şengün. And you know, you
tell
got
me the
to
case. What's the case for Şengün over Sabonis? Kings fans are furious. What's the case for Şengün?
Well, look, again, I'm a little old school, man. Winning matters. Winning simply matters, right? The Kings are, I think, in the 10 seed right now. I think they're 10th. Şengün has this Rockets team second, right? And you want to talk about playing on both sides of the floor. Şengün is having the best defensive season of his career by far.
What's changed with him on defense? What's different about him on the defensive end? Because that was prior the big concern with him.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of effort and motor. I mean, he's just... His first couple seasons in the league, Steven Silas and the Rockets had him in drop coverage, heavy drop coverage, right? And if you're going to play an effective drop, you have to have some deterrent ability, right? Long arms, height, both of those two, kind of like Brook Lopez. He can just camp out and still intimidate you enough to make that pull-up shot, you know, I don't know, just a little more difficult. Şengün's like 6'9", maybe 6'10", not a crazy wingspan. He's just not intimidating in drop coverage. So you have to have him press. You have to have him, you know, shoot the gaps or switch, rub off on you know, whoever he's switched onto if they're going to try to isolate him and kind of pick on him, right? And he's done that. He's been able to get on the perimeter. He's been able to move his feet. He's actually really effective defending the rim. He gets just under a block per game, but he's done a good job of using his strength to wall off guys when they go up for shots and just make it a little more difficult than you would think. So he's not a traditional rim protector, but he is protecting the rim. So, and then you saw in the Celtics game, man, I mean, there are possessions where he will fly all over the court. You know, he'll go pick up someone on the perimeter and then he'll switch and then he'll trap out close to half court and then he'll peel all the way back and pick up whoever's rolling to the rim. And we can talk about this later, but I think that's fed into his lack of efficiency. He's having the least efficient season of his career so far. I think a big part of it is because of the energy he's expending on the defensive end of the floor. But to loop us back to the All-Star conversation, I mean, that's something that, quite frankly, unfortunately, Domantas Sabonis just isn't known for doing, right? And so I think that's a big deal. Obviously, Sabonis is just like puts up the stats, but if you even want to get into the stats, Şengün is drawing doubles, right? Şengün is drawing doubles, sometimes triples, and then initiating offense in that manner. Sabonis, the Kings run a lot of pistol action, right? Fox will come rub off the shoulder. It's a DHO. He's just a lot of handoff assists. He has a beast rebounding. I don't want to take anything away from him. I just think that the way that they impact the game, in terms of, you know, how the defense and the opposition has to strategize around them is fundamentally different. And then also Şengün plays defense and the Rockets are winning. So that's the case.
Kings fans will not be surprised. I agree.
I mean, it just is what it is, you know, just is what it is. So again, you got to play some type of premium on winning. That's why I'm okay with Harden getting the nod. I think Harden's had a great season turning the clock back. Kawhi has been out for most of the season and Harden has them right in the mix, which, by the way, obviously I'm a Rockets fan, but that's what he did in Houston, right? You'd give him this roster, you'd look at the roster on paper and you'd say, yeah, that team's not going to really do anything. And his floor was 50 wins. And it looks like that's what the Clippers are kind of looking like or designed to be this season. And now Kawhi's back. And obviously Norman Powell's having an incredible season.
Definitely. And I think that's, again, one of the cases here for expanding the rosters. Like a lot of these guys, I mean, Sabonis has done enough to at least deserve a shot as one of the guys on a roster. Norm Powell has too. Devin Booker has done enough as well. A lot of these guys have in the Western Conference. I wish the rosters were deeper because it really is a reflection of just how rich with good quality, high level talent the NBA has right now. In fact, we're having these discussions where there's so many guys where it's about how they not make the team rather than how that guy make the team. Which there were conversations like that in the mid-late 2000s. At this point, the teams are so freaking deep. And even tonight, we'll talk about the Rockets-Grizzlies game in a minute. No Şengün on Houston, no Ja Morant on Memphis, and yet it's still a game littered with high-level talent of both sides.
So would you rather have it this way or would you rather have an all-star team with Kyle Korver making it?
You'd rather have it this way. That's for sure.
Yeah, if you remember those Hawks with the four, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree with you, man. I mean, it's a deep league. It's a good problem to have. It sucks to be the snub, right? It sucks to be the fan base getting snubbed. I mean, I'll be honest, I was sitting on the edge of my seat and when they started naming the names, I didn't think Şengün was going to get named, you know? So to have that feeling sucks, but it is a good problem to have that the league has this much talent.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. All right, Roosh, let's talk about that game between the Grizzlies and the Rockets. Unfortunately, your Rockets lost the game 120-119 to Memphis. No Şengün, no Ja Morant in the game. We got to talk about the ending, first of all, because closing minute of the game, Grizzlies get a stop. Jalen Wells is dribbling the ball up the floor. He's got an open layup on the break and then, whoop, timeout on the play, and suddenly the camera cuts to Taylor Jenkins, the Grizzlies head coach, just blowing a gasket, going nuts. Looked like he was about to rip the head off of the referee. I didn't call a timeout. He looked like he was going to kill him out there. Really did. And the coaches, the assistants are calming him down, like, chill out, man. Let's relax. And then the Grizzlies inbound the ball. Jaren Jackson gets fouled and probably a makeup foul call. Hits both free throws. Grizzlies get a stop. They win the game. What was that foul? What was that call? Why'd the referee blow the whistle there? How many times are we going to have bad calls here, Roosh? Oh, my God.
Man, look, if we're going to be talking about changes that they need to make to the game, start with the officiating. It is by far the biggest problem with the game if you want to tweak anything. And tonight you saw, honestly, Kevin, I'm surprised that when Taylor Jenkins blew a gasket, I thought they were going to tee him up and double down. Because usually that's what they do, right? They blow the call and then they double down when you get pissed off at them for blowing the call. And there's no accountability. There's no transparency. It's just you really want fans to you know, tap back in, especially with a league that had issues with referees in the past. But when I was watching it live, I thought that they called a take foul. I thought that like they were stopping the play, right? I was like, oh, I was, my initial thought was, who the hell did that? And then I saw Taylor Jenkins losing his mind and I was like, wait, what's going on? And then, you know,
I had the same exact reaction. I thought somebody must have fouled Jalen Wells. So I was like, oh my God, no, now they're going to get free throws and the ball.
And the ball, right? Which, by the way, they called a take foul on Amen Thompson, I think a few minutes before that, that I thought was a terrible call, but that's neither here nor there. But, you know, and then look, at the end of the day, never fear. Dylan Brooks is there to bail you out with a foul and send you to the free throw line to lose the game. Ticky-tack foul, but in a situation like that, you got to be more aware and understanding that if you're going to play physical against Jaren Jackson and if you're going to, you know, test verticality and kind of bring your arm down, they're probably going to call it. And that's what Dylan Brooks did. And it lost the game. I'm not blaming him for losing the game, but it was a boneheaded decision.
That was the sixth foul of the game. You sound unsurprised.
I am very unsurprised. Dylan Brooks, I like Dylan Brooks. He has been a surprise to me. I hated the signing, and I have since changed my mind. But he does a lot of stuff like that, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, there, of all the things, we're going to talk more about the Houston side of things here. As you said, you're a Rockets fan. You have a Rockets podcast. So I want to focus on them today with 1 week till the deadline because they're in an interesting spot right now. With Dylan Brooks specifically, boy. One of the things I've been most wrong about in recent years of free agent signings, I said I wouldn't take him for the minimum. He's been a tone setter for Houston. He's been better as a shooter than he was his closing years with Memphis. He's been part of why this Houston team has been better. But I do want to continue talking about the end of that game. Aside from the Brooks foul here, Fred VanVleet, he gets the two final shots for Houston, a step back three and a pull up three. VanVleet is not a super efficient shooter off the dribble from three.
No, he's not.
That's really the best Udoka could get out of that Rockets offense at the end of that game.
So I love Ime Udoka, but Ime Udoka loves him some Fred VanVleet. You know, I've been praising Fred VanVleet lately because, and we'll talk about this kind of in depth, but with the changes to the starting lineup with Amen Thompson starting, given that Jabari Smith is out, Fred VanVleet has naturally shifted back into his proper role as like a fourth guy. And it's been working and that's what he's there to do, right? Earlier in the season, he was doing what you saw for the last 30 seconds. He was dribbling into pull-ups, jacking shots up, very inefficient. He also had a really bad turnover, I think a minute or two before that, where he fell down. He lost his dribble and just fell down and turned the ball over. He does not create separation, right? He took a step back over Jaren Jackson, the one right before the, you know, last shot of the game. I think there was 30 seconds left. Terrible idea. And then, you know, if you're going to run what they ran with Fred and Amen Thompson, I just think that's a terrible decision by Ime. Amen Thompson's obviously not a threat to shoot coming rolling over the top. So, you know, it's either going to be Amen getting the ball and crashing to the rack with the rock, or it's going to be a Fred step back. I think it's criminal to not give Jalen a touch there. Jalen Green gets separation. Jalen Green step back gets separation. If you want a clean look, that's probably your best bet at a clean look. So the fact that they didn't even look at him once in those last two possessions, I thought was a terrible decision.
So the Rockets, despite the loss, they have been trending up offensively. They still had 119 against a really good Grizzlies defense throughout the season. They're trending up. October, November, they ranked 18th in offensive rating. December, they ranked 13th in offensive rating. And then in January, they've ranked 8th in offensive rating. You mentioned VanVleet falling into a proper role, taking three or four less shots per game over this month with Amen Thompson in the starting five, as you said. What have been some other factors behind this steady progress over the course of the season for the Rockets offense?
So, I mean, first and foremost, it's Amen Thompson, right? Amen Thompson in the starting lineup. Look, the main issue with the Rockets was that Jalen Green was having a rocky season, okay? And so Fred VanVleet, Andy Mayodoka, they didn't really trust anyone else. Amen Thompson and Tari Eason were, you know, the Terror Twins coming off the bench doing their thing. But as far as like a lead, you know, playmaker, play initiator, scorer, Fred was taking the reins, and it was a lot of Fred VanVleet and Alperen Şengün, right? And teams were doubling, tripling Şengün. He'd kick it out. The Rockets were not shooting well, and it was just a stale offense. So you would see Fred VanVleet take it into his own hands a lot. They would spam pick and roll. You'd get a lot of Fred VanVleet taking a screen, dribble, pull up, and they weren't mid-range pull-ups, which he's actually pretty good at when he wants to. Issue is he doesn't shoot those enough, but they were dribble pull-ups from three, or sometimes because he's unable to get separation, he shoots it from ass deep, right? And so when he does that, it doesn't go in. And then in addition to that, it was Şengün, Fred, and a lot of Dylan Brooks as well. So those three guys are much more athletic than you and me, but they are not much more athletic than their peers in the NBA, right? So the Rockets had this like stuck in the mud, kind of slow, sloppy, unathletic offense with poor shooting. Not a good recipe for a good offense, right? Jabari Smith goes down. Amen Thompson comes into the starting lineup. By virtue of Amen Thompson coming into the starting lineup, you get all these different things unlocked, right? You get an extra playmaker. You get an excellent offensive rebounder. And I think it's like 11-ish starts since he came back from being suspended for throwing Tyler Hero across the court. he's averaged, I think it's 3.6.
What a great moment. That belongs in the season end highlight reel.
Hey, that's one of those moments as a fan where you're like, all right, keep that guy in Houston forever. So, but he's, you know, in his 11 starts, not counting tonight. I haven't looked at it tonight. Actually, I'll take a quick look at it tonight. He only had one offensive rebound. So we will not count tonight because I haven't done the math. But in the 11 starts, after coming back from suspension, he's averaging about 3.6, 3.7 offensive rebounds per game, which would put him, I think, in the top five in the league amongst all big men, right? He's an incredible offensive rebounder. You get a guy that cuts off the ball, which feeds right into Şengün, because they were very, you know, standstill, catch and shoot prior to that. And so it was easy to kind of just collapse on Şengün and then just live with, you know, whatever you were going to get shooting from the perimeter. And so, and he pushes it in transition, right? And he's super athletic, obviously. So that kind of slotted everything into place. All of a sudden, Jalen Green is playing the best basketball of his life, right? And now the Rockets go from being this like slow, stuck in the mud team to super athletic, super fast, above the rim. And in addition to that, Jalen's shot is now falling into place. And then also Fred is now, like I was saying earlier, he's in that natural fourth role. He's the most efficient stretch of the season has been this season for him, has been this stretch where Amen Thompson is starting. His three ball is finally back up. I don't know, you know, maybe not after tonight, but prior to tonight, it was back up to 35% after being in the low 30s all season.
And over 40% this whole month, it's been over 40%. Yeah, and over 90% from the free throw line. Like, he goes through these hot stretches. We saw it at the end of last season when he was just ripping apart defenses to close the year for Houston. I'm a believer in Jalen Green's shot. Like, he's a high touch guy. He's always been 80%+ from the free throw line. He's had these spurts. It's about consistency with him. And so I tend to lean as a believer in Jalen Green, despite all the ups and downs over the years. So stretches like this, I feel really optimistic about with him.
I think he's turned the corner. Like, I'm known amongst Rockets fans for being vocal about my skepticism about Jalen Green when he was not playing so well. That's like all in the past for me. I think he's turned a corner. A lot of it was mental for him, man. And that's why Amen Thompson unlocks like his rhythm and his confidence. And then once he gets going, no one can stop him except for him, you know? So all of that with Amen Thompson, it's just slots everything into place. And that's what you're seeing from these Rockets. And then in addition to that, actually, Cam Whitmore got called up from the G League, I think on December 19th. And Cam Whitmore has been excellent since being called up. Again, not counting tonight, 12 points a game, 4 boards a game since getting called up in that stint, 45% overall from the field, 38% from three. He's averaging 1 assist per game in that stretch, which is good for him because previously his per 30, he was averaging like 1 assist per 36, you know, so he's doing it in 20 minutes. So Cam Whitmore has also been a huge boost. And they did this with Tari Eason missing, I think, 13, 14 yes. straight games, right?
And so now Tari Eason's back. Yes. Yeah. And Eason, obviously, like you said, the Terror Twins off the bench when Amen was coming off the bench, they're stellar defensively together. But everything you're saying, right? Everything you're saying, it all seems to be a domino effect stemming from Jabari Smith going out on January 1st. Before that and after that, the difference in touches per game, pretty much everything is the same except for Jalen Green. He's getting about 10 more touches per game. Amen Thompson's getting about 20 more touches per game. Jabari Smith was getting about 30, 35, 36 total per game. So it's been going to Amen, been going to Jalen Green, and then you're seeing the offense get better for all other reasons you mentioned. But I can't help but wonder – You're seeing the improved offense. You're seeing Amen Thompson just blossom. Tari Eason is he's arguably the sixth man of the year. He's an excellent defender. He can play a bigger role if necessary, more minutes. I can't help but wonder that Jabari Smith is becoming the odd man out for the Rockets and should therefore be a trade piece for them in some type of move, either now or in the offseason. With everything else, it just feels like it makes sense and clicks together.
So I don't disagree with you. I do think Jabari is the most expendable of their kind of core pieces, as we're seeing right now, right? Proof is in the pudding, I would say. I don't think the Rockets are going to make that trade, though, this season, this deadline, right? In conversations I've had with the Rockets, you know, when you talk about, hey, what about this player? One option that I thought would make a lot of sense for the Rockets is Cam Johnson, right? Brooklyn is obviously trying to tank. Brooklyn's trying to, you know, position themselves in the draft. Houston has that 2027 swap from Brooklyn, right? It's the last of, their draft capital that they got from the Harden trade, and it's probably a really valuable one. And Houston also has some expiring salary, right? Jock Landale, Jeff Green, Jayshon Tate, they Aaron Holiday, who has a team option, I think, next season. They have guys they can package together to make the salary work, throw in the pick as the asset, which is more valuable, obviously, because it's Brooklyn's own pick, and go get a Cam Johnson. The reason I bring that up is because when you float this kind of idea, which you might get from the Rockets, is something like, hey, well, whose spot in the rotation would Cam Johnson take? Now, naturally, that would be Jabari Smith, right? But I say that to say, I think the Rockets are really confident in what they have. Like, I don't think that they're interested in shaking things up. Maybe they go get a piece. You've heard that they're interested in Rob Williams, right? Maybe they go get a piece to kind of fill a role, fill a niche, shot blocker, rebounder, whatever. But I just don't think they're ready to part ways with any of the core quite yet. But if they are going to, I think Jabari would be the guy. He's due an extension soon, so maybe you get off of, you know, that financial obligation by trying to move him. I think the question is, there's two elements for me. Number one, what is his value on the market, right? Is there a team out there that thinks that he has star potential and that they could get that star potential out of him? And number two, I think the bench could actually be good for him. In the starting lineup, he's just this kind of standstill, catch and shoot player. From what I've seen, he really looks successful when he's moving and he's in a rhythm. I don't think he's a great catch and shoot shooter. I don't know the percentage off the top of my head, but just the eye test, he just doesn't look that comfortable. And he looks more comfortable moving. And I think off the bench, he could get some of those touches. But
I mean, maybe when he does come back, he will be unleashed with this new look Rockets offense as well. Playing with speed, Amen, and Jalen Green. Who's to say that Jabari Smith coming off the bench, having some shared minutes with Amen and however the rotation looks, maybe he plays some of his best basketball as well. So I'm with you that I wouldn't trade him right now. I'd want to still see how he looks. He's still a super versatile defender. I still think he can be a better shooter than he's been throughout his NBA career. Again, another guy who's over 80% from the free throw line. This is probably a trend with some of Rafael Stone's selections as a GM. Guys who project as potential good shooters, even if they don't have full evidence of it at the college level or high school level or G League level in the case of Jalen Green. And granted, Jabari Smith shot the ball incredibly well his year at Auburn. You get my point. With Jabari Smith, I do believe he can be a better shooter moving forward. Now, with Houston, there's been talk about, you know, should they go get Jimmy Butler? Should they go get De'Aaron Fox? Should they make a big trade? Are they going to wait for Devin Booker? Are they going to get Kevin Durant? All this type of stuff, right? They're four tradable first, swaps, 5 seconds. Do you think they should be going for a Fox here? Like, should they be trying to make a big move? Do you have any indication that they could try to do an about face here and go for Fox over this next week?
Do I think they should? No. I mean, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right? This team is the 2 seed. They are rolling. I just don't know what De'Aaron Fox, obviously he's a great player, but does he fit into what they've got going right now? I'm not so sure. And yeah, I mean, look, I have it with a very trusted source with the Rockets. You know, I kind of inquired about, hey, De'Aaron Fox, you know, there's buzz, Kings making him available. Is that something that we're looking into? And, you know, quote, highly doubtful. So I don't think that the Rockets are interested, like I said, in making that superstar blockbuster type trade. And I certainly don't think it would be for De'Aaron Fox this season. That's the caveat. I don't know. You know, maybe they go to the playoffs and they kind of learn what their weaknesses are and then they address them after that. And maybe De'Aaron Fox is the solution to whatever weaknesses they identify in the postseason. But as they are composed right now, highly doubtful.
Now, this summer, I mentioned this on part one of this Trade Deadline Countdown podcast published on Thursday. I had talked about how one of Miami's fears is that the Nets this offseason could take on salary from a team that wants to create space to just outright sign Jimmy Butler. Houston is the team that a lot of people mention as someone who could do that. They have some cap space already, dump a little salary into Brooklyn, and boom, suddenly, you can sign Butler outright. Screw you, Miami. You know, you lose. Do you think that makes any sense as a path for Houston? Should they even be thinking about Jimmy Butler even this offseason? Or are you at this point just looking in a totally different direction from Butler for the Rockets, regardless of the timeline when he could be acquired?
So Jimmy Butler specifically, and then also specifically this offseason, two things. Number one, part of the answer is going to be contingent upon whether or not the Rockets, again, get into a playoff series and it's identified that for some reason, Jimmy Butler is the fix. You know, that's possible. I don't think it's likely, but it's possible. Do I think they should pursue Jimmy Butler? No. Jimmy Butler is a great player. Jimmy Butler with Ime Udoka would be, you know, a dog, right? They have Dylan Brooks, who obviously is not Jimmy Butler, but he's got that nasty kind of, you know, personality, and Ime Udoka loves Dylan Brooks. But I think the Rockets, if they're going to go after one of those big names, I think it's got to be someone that stretches the floor, and Jimmy Butler doesn't quite do that. I'm also just not, I'm just tired of Jimmy Butler's antics. I'm sorry, hate to say it, but it's like, come on, man, every team you're on, there's an issue. Whether or not you're justified is not for me to say, but at some point, like, you are the common denominator in all of these situations. So from a chemistry locker room perspective, like what the Rockets have put together in that locker room, what Rafael Stone and co have done, it's working. I mean, these players really like to play with each other. If anything, I would be targeting Kevin Durant, which is a no-brainer, right? Who wouldn't? But the Rockets have the Suns picks. And if the Suns do fail to put it all together, and then they're going to be facing some of these, you know, apron luxury tax implications based on kind of how they've put their roster together, I feel like you go pry KD, when he's got 1 year left, $50 million, and the Rockets have, like I said, their draft capital. So that could make sense. And he would slot in. I mean, long term, I think the Rockets need to upgrade the Dylan Brooks position. Right. And I think KD would be the perfect upgrade to that, but not Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, I'm with you there with the Durant over Butler. And that's like not, you know, some hot take to say something like that. Oh, KD yeah. over Jimmy Butler. But
right. But yeah, like, I take filet mignon over mac and cheese. Yes. You know,
so. Mac and cheese for Jimmy Butler.
Mac and cheese is delicious, but come on, I'm freestyling here, Cassie. Come on.
I love mac and cheese. I might take so mac and cheese over some filets. But a cowboy ribeye? Never. Give me mac and cheese on the side with a good cowboy ribeye, though.
I'll take mac and cheese pretty much any day, but I'll take a filet.
Any meal. But I think with KD specifically, it's an interesting scenario to think about, because that's in the back of the mind of the Warriors when it comes to, do we or do we not want to go for Jimmy Butler? Because maybe you're thinking, oh, maybe KD could, you know, blow it, like the Suns blow it up this offseason and he wants to return to the Bay. But for Houston, like you said, they have the Suns picks. The Suns can trade KD to the best offer. They don't need to send him where he wants to go. And maybe he'd rather go to Houston than go back to Golden State, which is on the decline at this point, to try to win more. So I think for Houston, that's the path that makes most sense. Despite KD's age, he's still a high-level player, still one of the 20 best guys in the NBA, still an all-star starter right now, as voted on by the fans, media, and players. So I think with KD, man, that's a real possibility for the Suns here, because they're having a hard time. They're trying like hell to find somebody to take on Bradley Beal. They're trying like hell to do it, and they still would need him to waive his no-trade clause. If they can't get Butler, and even if they do get Butler, there's still a real possibility this team makes the play-in, loses in the first round, and then the offseason comes and the Suns are like, do we really want to do this again? Or do we want to trade Booker for 6 first-round picks and a young, really good young player, and KD for 4 firsts, and be a young team and build moving forward without our own firsts, except for the ones we get back from Houston for KD, and just build it back up slowly after going for it and we just missed? I think that's a real possibility.
So look, you saw what the Rockets did to the Nets, right? And a lot of people, when Rafael Stone made that trade, a lot of people gave the Rockets a lot of heat for it, right? If you remember, because I very vividly remember, a lot of folks thought the Rockets should have taken the Ben Simmons package, okay? Now, good thing they didn't do that, right?
No, no. I was on your side of this one. Don't take the Ben Simmons package.
Okay, yeah. Yes. And, you know, and I mean, glad that they didn't. Tyrese Maxey was the deal breaker, so credit to the Rockets for trying to pry Tyrese Maxey from Philly, and credit to Philly for not giving Tyrese Maxey away. But obviously, they preyed on Brooklyn's draft capital, right? Now, there's elements of that trade that they didn't quite nail down, and we don't have to get into that, but you saw multiple years later, Brooklyn was more than willing to send those picks back or get those picks back and give us Phoenix's picks. And in the meantime, it turned into Tari Eason and Reed Shepard, right? And I believe half of Cam Whitmore, if I'm not mistaken, by the chain of the trades down the line when they kept flipping the assets. So not a bad return so far. And they still have, you know, the back half of some of those picks. It's kind of an interesting creative strategy that Rafael Stone and the Rockets front office has created, where they're just snatching up your draft capital and then preying on your downfall and waiting for you to kind of get in a position, right? And we watched Brooklyn squirm, right? Like, they tried everything they could do to salvage that situation, and they weren't able to do it. And they finally gave up. They submitted and said, all right, fine. We're going to trade Mikal Bridges. We're going to go full tank. We'll make the trade with you, get our picks back, give you the Suns picks, boom. So they're hoping that something similar happens in Phoenix. And I mean, if you look at Phoenix's cap sheet, like, it makes sense, man. Phoenix is in trouble. If Phoenix doesn't compete this season, if they don't compete by mid next season, I mean, how did they keep this together, right? You would think, I mean, they're going to make a couple desperation moves, right? They traded for Nick Richards from the Hornets, who actually I think will be pretty good for them.
And they're going to try to trade Nurkic.
Right.
I'd be surprised if they don't trade Nurkic.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that whole situation's weird, by the way. Like, he says he hasn't talked to Mike Budenholzer for I don't know what's going on with that, but they're going to try to dump Beal and Nurkic. They're going to make some desperation, last-ditch effort, maybe, I think, for Jimmy Butler, right? I think we all think that. But is Jimmy Butler the fix for that team? Like, it's just not the roster doesn't make sense. They have talent, but like we talked about earlier, there's a lot of talent in the NBA. And we're kind of in this era now where the whole big three thing is over, right? The best teams in the West right now are teams that did a proper rebuild. Oklahoma City, Houston, Memphis, right? Denver is coming, and Denver has their core from, you know, like, that's all core players, right? They didn't go out and poach star free agents. So
that is the top four, really, right? All four of them built very similar ways.
Yeah. So I just think the whole, like, hey, we're going to just get an amalgamation of top elite star talent and just throw it out there and see what happens, I think that's over. So I think Phoenix is in trouble.
Boston won the finals last year doing the same thing. Tatum, Brown,
yeah,
Core,
proper rebuild,
drafted them, and they make, you know, timely acquisitions to bolster the team around them. And similar,
look at Cleveland.
Cleveland.
I mean, obviously they went and got Donovan Mitchell, but like, the core of that team,
Mobley,
is
Garland.
Evan Mobley. Mobley Garland, right? And then they took, what's really funny actually, is obviously they took Jared Allen from the Rockets, but they took him during their rebuild. They took him during the season that they tanked and got the draft pick for Mobley. But what's funny is that the Rockets could have had Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, and they passed up on both of them, which I, at the time, I was like, oh my God, huge mistake. But it's one of those funny situations where it's like, it worked out for Cleveland and it worked out for Houston. So
win-win. Maybe they will meet in the finals someday. Roosh, thanks for joining me today, man. Appreciate it.
Hey, man, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure. Always happy to talk Rockets. So I'm just happy that the Rockets are worth talking about, because it's been a while.
They are definitely worth talking about. They're an exciting team. Amen Thompson, one of the brightest spots in the league right now. It's been fun to watch Houston. Thanks, Roosh.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Coming up next, we got Ariel Helwani talking Knicks. All right, now joining me now is from Uncrowned and Yahoo Sports, and most importantly, Knicks superfan, Ariel Helwani. Ariel, what's up?
Yes. It's great to finally be here, Kevin. I've been waiting very impatiently for my invite. I figure it has something to do with those jerseys behind you, and you don't want my kind on your program. But very, very happy. This is a great honor for me. Big fan, and love that you're over on the dark side, so to speak, that you came over here, because the show has been awesome. So thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, Ariel. Been great to join you here at Yahoo Sports. You joined, a couple weeks or a couple months before me. It's been awesome.
I'm the trailblazer. I started.
Yes, you are. It's true. You are. It's been great to be your teammate here. I want to talk Knicks with you. I want to talk Knicks, because they're one of the most interesting teams in the NBA right now. 31-16, a game back from Boston for the two seed. They've won five in a row against some hot teams, the Kings, Grizzlies, Nuggets on Wednesday. I mean, the last time the Knicks were in the finals was 99. You were a teenager then.
Oh, yeah.
You got to be feeling better about the Knicks right now than you have in decades, right?
So, you know, I hope you didn't notice, or maybe you did and were wondering why I was looking off camera there for a second, because I'm very particular about my Knicks. And you said 31-16, and far be it for me to correct a great host like you, but don't rob us of a win, Kevin. We're 32-16, okay? And so go check it. Go check
32
it right now.
32-16!
Yeah, how about
32
that?
32-16!
I believe our best record at this point in the season, dating back to 1998, is what I read earlier today. So amazing. I'm feeling quite good. You know, every time it's a fascinating thing. There's so much that we could talk about regarding the Knicks, because obviously, like, we're right about to start the season, feeling good about the team, still lamenting the fact that Hartenstein isn't there, because I felt like he was such a huge part of last year's magical run. But all right, we got to move on. Everything's going to be okay. And then kablam, the cat trade happens and you're worried about the vibes. You're worried about the chemistry. I love Dante for life. What he did in the Philly series, in particular game two, unbelievable. I was okay with saying goodbye to Randall, but obviously we needed a center. Can't trust Mitchell Robinson. And, you know, the season is starting out okay, and there's highs, there's lows, and then we have a 9-game winning streak, and then we go on a bit of a losing streak, and then all of a sudden it's like, ah, look, it's Tibbs again. It's so tiring. Every time they go on a little mini, you know, everyone goes through this in December and January, a little mini kind of like snag. Tibbs this, minutes that, they're pretenders this, and now we're back on track. Huge win on Wednesday against Denver. Last few games, I mean, I am not used, as a kid who grew up watching the 90s Knicks, seeing the Knicks and a 140 number next to them is like absurd to me, because I'm used to the 70s and 80s of the 90s. But I'm feeling very good, and I can't wait. We're a week away from the trade deadline. I am very anxious about, you know, the next 7 days, because I feel like we need to make a move or two. Obviously, we don't have the same type of flexibility, but the bench is the big one, right? We need to strengthen the bench. I could talk about this for an hour straight. I don't want to keep on rambling, but I'm looking at this right now, and we're a game behind Boston, and I don't know if a lot of people would have predicted that after that trade, so I'm feeling quite good.
Well, the Knicks are one of the teams that's the most interesting at the deadline too. That's why I want to talk this week, because A, the Knicks are fun. They're a great team and all that, but they are in a position where it feels like the window's open here. And you mentioned Mitchell Robinson as a guy that you can't really trust. He hasn't played yet this season. There's uncertainty whether he will play this season. I'd imagine, is that the area where you have the greatest concern, is depth at the five behind Cat? You have Precious Achiuwa playing as well, some five, but he's on the smaller side. Where do you want to shore up that bench for the Knicks to enhance their finals odds?
It's 100% the center position for multiple reasons. Number one, Cat is dealing with a wonky thumb, and that makes me nervous. And you can tell if you watch their games, like, he's always kind of touching it and playing with it and grimacing at times. So obviously Precious is our backup. Okay, he's had a solid season. He was hurt for the first month or so. I could live with that. In a perfect world, it's Cat and Mitch. I just don't trust Mitch at this point. He is just way too injury prone. We were told that he was going to come back in January. And by the way, if they do keep him, I don't hate the idea, and they don't make a trade, I don't hate the idea of just saving him for April, to be honest, because he is so injury prone and because we'll need that depth come playoff time. The issue is, it seems like everyone who covers the Knicks, a lot of great people who cover them on a week-to-week, day-to-day basis on the beat, Ian Begley, one of my favorites, keep hearing about Jericho Sims being on the block. And I think we know who Jericho Sims is, and I think we know what his ceiling is, and I'm okay with that. The problem is, if Cat gets injured and is not playing here and there, and you don't have Mitch, Precious is starting, you literally have no backup center anymore. There's absolutely no depth there. So I would love to be able to you know, beef that up a little bit. I would love to be able to get a little more muscle up there. I would love a little bit more muscle up in the four spot too, because, you know, OG has been injury prone as well. Thank God he's been tremendous, especially as of late. There was that weird period around 10 or so days ago where it feels like he was unhappy and Josh Hart was kind of speaking in code about him. And that was all very strange, but it seems like we got past that. But he got the elbow thing. He had the groin thing in the playoffs. I would just love a little more. I loved what they did at the deadline last year with, you know, Bogdanovich and Burks. That was great. It didn't quite pan out for obvious reasons, but we just need something off the bench. Campaign has been fine. McBride has been fine. I love Kolek, but he never plays. You know, it's I wish he would play more. So I just, if to win a championship, as you know, you need more. The starting five, I would argue, is the best starting five in the league, but we need more after that.
Well, there was a report from Michael Scotto who said the Knicks were looking at Chris Boucher, a big man for the Toronto
Montreal
Raptors.
Boy. I love Chris Boucher. I would love that.
Doesn't he make perfect sense?
Holy crap. He's a big, I didn't see this.
Length. He can shoot threes at 37% on the year. Boucher, to me, is like exactly the type of guy the Knicks should be going for. Like, they have limited assets. Like you said, they gave a bunch up to go get Cat, a bunch up to go get Bridges. They still have one tradable first. They could do swaps. They have 8 second round picks. They have some movable salaries. Boucher, with his two-way versatility, that's a perfect Cat backup. You can play him with Cat. Because to me, like, we saw last year with Minnesota, the reason why the Wolves were able to get through the Nuggets was because you had Cat defending Jokic at a high level, Gobert off of Jokic, helping off ball, protecting the rim. The too big option is something that the Knicks are missing right now. We don't really see Cat and Achiuwa on the floor together. And even then, Precious is more. If you get a true five, Precious is who helps you at that backup power and forward spot. He moves kind of towards that rather than playing the five. So to me, if I'm the Knicks, I'm really trying to go get Boucher, no matter what it costs, to bolster my odds here. Then you get depth at big. You get a ton of wings. Jalen Brunson playing the best basketball of his life right now. To me, that's the complete roster. It's just simply getting Chris Boucher.
Oh, my gosh. So I didn't see this. I love Chris Boucher because he's from Montreal, but I also love his game. I'm from Montreal as well. The Knicks and Raptors have a funny history of trades together.
Oh, yes.
I would say we won the last one, even though everyone was telling me at the time that we weren't going to win the last one. Of course, the OG trade for RJ, quickly Achiuwa. I would love that. So I didn't see this. Who are they saying we'd give up for Boucher?
No names were reported in it, okay. But Boucher makes about $10 million. So in this case, you would have to give up either Mitchell Robinson, who makes 14.4. That'd be the easy way to do it. You could also give up Achiuwa plus Miles McBride, some type of combination like that. There's different combinations here that could work out. But the cleanest one is Mitchell Robinson.
Yeah, and Mitch has been great, and he's a tremendous defensive player, not so much an offensive player. I mean, he doesn't really add much other than the stuff around the rim. I just think it's time. He's just too unreliable. We need that guy, and Boucher is very athletic, and I actually think that he has more to do. Like, he can be better. I don't think he has, like, fully grown. He's a tall, lanky guy, and he's still quite young. I would be all about that trade. I would love that trade. I wouldn't love giving up McBride. Achiuwa going back to Toronto would be a little bit weird. But the Mitch one, I could definitely be convinced of.
Yeah, I think that's the one that makes the most sense. Mitchell Robinson, a first round pick, you know, that might be a bit much, maybe a bunch of seconds instead. But to me, that's the type of deal Knicks should be making, because assuming good health, we saw it on Wednesday night. Karl Anthony Towns doesn't have a big scoring game by any means, but excellent defense against Jokic again. He just has a good way of defending Jokic in ways that other bigs don't. 17 points on 15 shots for Jokic on Wednesday. Knicks win that game 122-112. Earlier in the season, Knicks beat the Nuggets 145-118. Jokic had 22 points on 20 shots. Towns just knows how to defend Jokic. And that's why I thought it was weird when, during the game, minutes before the Warriors were really going to be suiting up and playing, Draymond Green, who was out for the Warriors.
Oh, yeah.
Draymond Green made a weird post. He's like, Cat and a full front on Joker. Even if you win the game, it don't matter. You will never hold the respect from an opponent to win at the highest level. Pride must make you sit down and guard, even if you give up 40. Winning is a mindset, and in order to win a championship, you have to win the mental edge. That's why only a few guys per era win all the championships. They understand that thing. Dude, Cat just had a great game defensively against Jokic after beating him last year, defending him at a high level too. It's just a weird criticism.
There's a weird history between those two, no? Yes. Isn't there? Like, what is it? Like, what's their beef?
Draymond gave a chokehold to Rudy Gobert last year, for one. And Draymond, he picks his fights with everybody as well.
I feel like he always hates on the Knicks. It's like the cool thing. No one can... I mean, I have said, this is a bit of a tangent, but I have said time and again that Inside the NBA is the greatest studio show in the history of sports. But honestly, I'm ready for a new era because every time I tune into those guys, they're always crapping on the Knicks. Always. Like, you can't crap on them right now. What are they? Top five best teams in the league, top six at worst. And it's always like little pot shots. It's always not wanting to give them their props. It's always taking shots at how soft they are, or Tibbs is doing this, or he's not doing that, or Brunson is too short and he's not that guy. Enough already. There was a period where like the LOL Knicks was a thing, but you know, again, I've seen Draymond crap all over the Knicks. Sometimes you could say it's warranted to do it after yesterday's game. I mean, did you see that play at the end where he blocks it? It bounces off the backboard.
Oh, yeah.
Brunson gets it, and then passes it to McBride. Mikal Bridges, and for that incredible reverse. I mean, like, they were humming out there. The last couple of games in particular has just been beautiful basketball out of these guys.
I mean, like you said, they had a little dip, and right now they're playing at a high level. But like, if you just, you know, if you zoom out with the Knicks, the last 2 months since November 30th, third in offensive rating, no surprise there. Everybody thought they'd have a top offense. The questions have been about defense. But over those last 2 months, they're sixth in defensive rating.
Wow.
Sixth for 2 months. That's a pretty big sample at this point.
Yeah.
So I feel like with the Knicks, there's concern come postseason time with Cat as a lone center, which is why we're having this conversation about them either getting Mitchell Robinson back or going to get another big. But they're sixth in defensive rating for 2 months straight now. That's really impressive. I think it speaks to Mikal Bridges getting better over the course of the year.
Yes.
Josh Hart, I mean, he's not an all-star, but maybe we should have
a very strong case. You can make a very strong case that he is one of the 24 most valuable players in the league, right? You can make a very strong case.
Do we have this wrong? Like, do we have this wrong when it comes to naming all-stars, that a Josh Hart should be an all-star type?
100%. Wait, what would be wrong about that? That's actually
nothing.
A great. Yeah, no,
well,
but
that's what I'm saying. Like, do
he's
we
not
have it
get
wrong?
Because he's not the most popular. He's kind of, you know, he's not a superstar. He's beloved by his home team, if you will, but he doesn't have that like it factor star power. People, Josh Hart, what? Really? He's 1,000%. If you just look at who have been the most impactful and successful players this year, 24 of them. He has to be on there. I mean, just look at him yesterday. It's unbelievable. This guy, by the way, this guy's a shooting guard, really. He's a shooting guard and he plays like a power forward. It's unbelievable. I don't even think he's like a true small forward, but the way he goes after the ball, the way he hustles, he's been outstanding. What a deal that was. Cam Reddish for Josh Hart. One of the all-time great trades.
I didn't realize it was Cam Reddish.
Yeah, man.
I kind of forgot about that.
Yeah. There might have been a pick involved as well, but golly, like what a trade.
God. I mean, he's like you said, he's what, 6'4", 6'5", and he averages almost 10 boards a game.
It's crazy.
It's nuts. He does everything. He'll screen, he passes the ball, he's selfless, defends at a high level, sets a tone. He doesn't just defend. But like you said, the dives on the floor, the hustle, it sets a tone for your team. It's part of what defines the character of this Knicks team. And that's why, I mean, I get the concern with Cat at the five. But their defense has been great for 2 months. They have a ton of wings to throw at the Celtics, to throw at Tatum, throw at Brown. Guys like Hart can defend smaller if it's against the Cavs. Mitchell, Garland, he can defend a Mobley if necessary on a switch.
Mm-hmm.
The Knicks have ultimate versatility at the wing spot, and it's largely, you know, OG, Bridges, Hart, that trio.
Right now, how far do they go? What do you think? What do you feel? If the team stays the same, they don't make a deal. Can they beat the Celtics?
I think so.
Really?
I mean, my concern level with Boston is increasing a little bit.
Why?
I mean, the shooting consistency is number one. I know everybody's talking about, you know, Jaylen Brown with Boston. It's, he's taken a step back. That's true. And the concern has been about the way the ball is moving on offense. That's true to an extent. It feels like they've moved away from what worked last season. But number one to me is they're an average 3-point shooting team percentage wise. They were elite efficiency last year from three, which is the bedrock of their offensive style. They take more threes than anybody, but if they're a 15th to 20th in 3-point percentage, suddenly that style of play is not significantly as the difference maker as it was in the past. So with Boston, I worry that it's tired legs. They played until June. Three of their guys were on the Olympics last year, not getting a true regular offseason. Two of those guys, Derek White and Drew Holiday, are really struggling to shoot from three as of late. Holiday has all season long. So I think with those guys collectively, I just don't know if I'm trusting the firepower of that team as much, on top of some of those other concerns, Jaylen Brown regressing, Kristaps Porzingis being up and down, his health, and just the overall way the ball is moving. So the window's open. Boston could fix it, but I don't think they're unbeatable by any means. And the Knicks have the weapons to make it a really deep, tough series. So I think the Knicks have a shot, man. I do. Wow. I think they're right up there with the Cavs and the Celtics. I really do feel that way.
You know how this makes me feel, Kevin, because I, other than my family, my kids, my wife, et cetera, I have two loves on this earth, and Knicks and the Bills are my two loved ones. And I'm still in mourning over this past Sunday's game. And all I want in life is to see those two teams win championships. That's it. I never saw the Bills, obviously. I was there. I was watching the four straight Super Bowls, and the Knicks, you know, in the 70s, obviously wasn't alive. I just want one. I don't want a dynasty. I don't need 4 out of 5 years. I don't need 3 in a row. I don't need back-to-back. I just want one. And there's a part of me that's still in mourning. But the thought that maybe, just maybe, in June, I could maybe cross one off the list, it's been very painful. Last year really, really hurt, because I thought for sure we were going to beat the Pacers, and I thought we had a chance if we were healthy against Boston. Of course, we didn't have Randall anymore as of January, and then OG gets hurt, and Josh is hurt, and Jalen's hurt, and everyone's hurt. But I thought we could, at full strength, we could have given Boston a run for its money. Maybe we don't win. And if we did win, we could have definitely given Dallas a run for their money. It feels like I'm right there with both teams. And so I'm just praying that this comes together, no one gets hurt. Please, God, no one get hurt, and that we're able to add someone and go on a run here. I'm still very, even if we add Boucher, like, I still feel like something is missing a little bit on the bench. I'm a little bit worried about that. But as far as the starting five goes, I really, really trust these guys.
You know, is something missing from the bench because Tibbs isn't giving the bench the chance?
I don't subscribe to this.
You don't think it's a minute? They ran out of gas last year.
Yeah, they ran out of gas, but here's the thing. Like, people complain all the time, but who do you want him to play?
But like, that really could happen again.
But who
Why can't Deuce play more? Why can't they give Tyler Cole, like a rookie, a chance to see if he can figure something out and be a contributor as a young guy? Why can't Tibbs play those guys more?
It's not an incredibly impressive collection of players. We have to be honest. Like, you compare, I went to the OKC game at MSG, and it was so depressing. And I thought, oh my God, this is an embarrassment. We were in that game for 6 minutes, and to see the balance that they had, by the way, missing two of their best players, to see the guys who were coming off the bench. I mean, who the hell is Isaiah Joe? I still have nightmares about Isaiah Joe. Who is this guy? He's hitting 6 threes in the first half at Madison Square Garden. Who is this guy? Killing us. And I actually have like a soft spot for OKC, if only because they have SGA and Lou Dort, Montrealer, Canadian. I like those guys. I want them to be successful, but not against us. And I do also have a thing against, you know, teams that have moved, because I'm an Expos fan as well. And so I feel for the Seattle fans. Nevertheless, it exemplified that we don't have that type of depth, we don't have that type of balance. And so, yes, I understand, I see the stats, I see the minutes, I see the complaints, but really, like, you have Jalen Brunson killing it. How much time are you giving campaign? Deuce McBride has been a little bit, you know, he's been a little bit wishy-washy this year, and also hurt at times for several games. So, I don't know. I love Tibbs. And not to bring this back to the Bills, but it's the same thing with Sean McDermott. It's like, do you remember what it was like before these guys got here? Do you remember the Derek Fisher, David Fizdale, Jeff Hornacek era? Like, look what Tibbs has done for us. So I'm going to back that guy until the end.
The minutes could come back and bite you, though. They could. I mean, like, it's kind of funny talking to people around the NBA when Tibbs was on his, you know, hiatus away from coaching, and he was doing a tour going to all these different staffs and learning and taking notes. And then he goes back
to the exact same.
And it's the same thing.
Yeah.
What was all that for? He's just still number one and number three in minutes. Mikal Bridges and Josh Hart. Like, they have five guys, and all five of their starters are in the top 30. Three of them are in the top 7 in minutes per game this year. I do have concerns there, man. Like, I know you're right. Like, why would you not play those guys as much? But because it's a regular season.
I know.
And he's given playoff minutes to some of these guys. So that's where my concern is with the Knicks, because I think they actually might have some more talent that's worth investing in off the bench than Tibbs is willing to give them. Yeah. At the same time, though. I get it. I understand. Jalen Brunson's having an unbelievable season. He's been tremendous this season. Right now, he's averaging over 25 points, over 7 assists, with a true shooting percentage over 60. That's even better than last year. And I looked this up earlier today. In NBA history, there's been only 8 players to average those numbers, over 25 points, over 7 assists, over 60 true shooting. Larry Bird, Michael Jordan, LeBron James, James Harden, Nikola Jokic, Damian Lillard, Trae Young, and Luka Doncic.
Wow.
Jalen Brunson has a chance to be the 9th. Pretty amazing company there for him.
No, he's been unbelievable. What a leader. He's so tough. I wish he wouldn't fall as much as he does. He does fall a lot. That's one of my big complaints about the Knicks. They fall a lot. Also, and Clyde talks about this all the time. They do complain a lot, but he has been amazing. And he's so damn clutch down the stretch. Rarely makes mistakes. There was that one Philly game a couple of weeks ago on the road where there was a really rare turnover very late in the game. But he's been amazing, and I trust him. And it's for all these years, our weakest position was point guard, right? You know, we had the Rod Strickland era, we had the Mark Jackson era. You know, I grew up in the Charlie Ward, Chris Childs era. And then it was just a hodgepodge. I mean, we had the Elfrid Payton era. We had the Ray Felton era. There was a lot of lean years. And so to have a leader like that as the point guard.
Lean years for Ray Felton.
That's not nice. That was a great team, by the way. That 2012-2013 team was like the lone bright spot. Everyone always says like biggest game in 20 years, biggest game. They forget that one season where we had Jay Kidd and Rasheed Wallace and Kurt Thomas came back, and it was all the old dudes led by Carmelo Anthony, and Roy Hibbert blocked them at the rim. That was a great year. We had 50-something wins, I think like 54 wins, but then we fell back down to earth.
I mentioned Trae Young as one of those guys who hit that threshold, so I have a couple MMA NBA crossover questions for you here. How Trae Young stack up as a heel character in your world?
Oh, he's a fantastic heel character. He's more pro wrestling heel. And actually he's made a cameo or two in the world of pro wrestling. He's great. I mean, I was actually at the game where he did the dice thing in the middle, and I wanted to freaking run onto the court and clothesline him. He's so damn annoying. Don't get me started on the hair. I don't understand it, but yeah, he kills us. I can't get over like that series.
Wait, Felton's weight is off limits, but Trae Young's hair isn't.
That's right. That's right. First of all, Felton is a retired guy. He put in his time. Come on, Trae Young's hair is an abomination. What is going on with that thing? Is there not a loved one that tells him like, "Yo, man, this is a problem. This is a problem. You're a good looking guy. What is going
on? Should he just go with a one, kind of like your rock? Yes. Just something nice. Clean that up. Grow the beard out.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. if I do say so myself. And by the way, can I just say as an aside, I was watching them yesterday and they were wearing like white and blue jerseys. I hate this new thing where teams are going so far away from their color schemes. It's a very soccer thing where you're getting these. I'm like, who is this team right now? And they were wearing these like, I thought it was like 19. It was like 1997 Cavs with Mark Price, and they had that like,
oh yeah, I remember those
splash of paint. Yeah. That's what the jersey looked like. Yeah. It was not even remotely close to Hawks colors. Anyway, that's a tangent.
No, it's true. You're right. You're 100% right, and this matters for casual fans who turn on a game. Like if you turn on an NFL game, you see the jerseys, you see the field, you know right away who's playing. But then sometimes you tune into a Bucks game and they're wearing blue.
Huh? It's annoying me.
What?
When did this happen? Also, it used to be like Knicks wore white at home, They wore blue on the road, and that was it. And then in the late 90s, we started to get into like the third alternate. Remember the Bulls had the black jersey and everyone had the Rodman and everything? Okay, fine, I could deal with the third. Now every team has like 6-7 jerseys, and what drives me nuts is when a home team is wearing away colors. Like last night, the Knicks were wearing some sort of like navy blue that I don't like at home. The Knicks have to wear white at home. And there's certain teams, Knicks, Celtics, Lakers. I would put Bulls in there, like, they cannot change anything. You keep that white and green. That's it. But this whole thing of getting 6-7 jerseys and not like staying with your color scheme is very, very annoying. The Mavs have like a weird array of colors. This white one that they do, and I don't know. And all the busy. And don't get me started on the. But I have no other outlet to have these hot takes. I can't talk about this on my show. So you're getting
Fire
subjected
away.
To all the freaking NBA Cup. You certainly have to agree with these courts. What's going on with these courts in the NBA Cup?
So I'll tell you what. With the courts, I liked them last year. I didn't like them this year. For some reason, my mind, it just shifted in my head. Something shifted, and I think it's because of the jerseys. It's because of the jerseys where it's just too much. The courts and the jerseys are too much together. To me, it's like one or the other.
What are they
but
doing?
But I don't want the jerseys, because the jerseys need to be white at home, color on the road.
Yes.
And it needs to be the traditional jerseys. If I'm tuning into a Celtics-Lakers game, I don't want to see the Celtics wearing some alternate with like lime green lettering. I don't want to see that.
I hate it.
And so the courts become cheesy. The court that I do like is the final court.
Final court's
in Vegas.
Cool. Yes.
That court's great. To me, stick a bit more to that. You can have an alternate court, but make it feel a little bit more traditional without the color. It just pops. It's too much.
Too much.
Too
like
extreme.
The Sixers one had this bright blue. I was like,
the Bulls had blood red.
Oh, yeah. What is this? I would love the NBA, I feel like aesthetically, usually makes the right calls, but with these jerseys and these courts. Just, and I get it. You're trying to distinguish. You're trying to distinguish it from the regular season games. I get it. But put a logo there, the trophy. I still maintain, by the way, I know that Adam Silver is a big soccer fan, and he likes to, you know, he's trying to make the FA Cup version for the NBA. Don't you look? I've always said, bring in some G League teams, bring in some Euro teams. Let's really open this up. Wouldn't that make the NBA Cup so much more fun? Do you think they'll ever do that? Or is it always going to be just like the Hornets and the Magic on a random November night?
I do think that's Adam Silver's long-term goal.
Oh,
is
really?
To have, when they expand to 32 teams, I don't know if this would happen immediately, but to me, the way to do it is just have a single elimination with all 32 teams.
Okay.
Like, why not just go all
but
the
can
way
we get
there?
Some Euro teams in there?
Maybe.
Can we get some G League teams? Like, wouldn't
sure.
you love to see the Westchester Knicks go on a run and beat the Hornets and then go down the wire against the Bucks? Like, wouldn't that be great?
Led by Tyler Kolek, right?
Tyler Kolek, TJ Warren, Jericho Sims, if he's still on the team, freaking Jacob Toppin. Let's go. I would love it.
I think they should go with something like that.
I
think
it'd be
fun.
That's what the FA Cup is all about. The FA Cup, you have a third division team playing against Man United, and for one night, they have a chance to dream big. That's the whole magic of it all.
Well, the NBA does want to kind of, you know, I'm not sure exactly what their plan is, but they want to have some type of footprint in Europe. They want to have something there. And so I think long term, that's Adam Silver's vision.
Okay.
It's just now they're taking baby steps to get there, where it starts with, you know, the group play and 8 teams and 4 to go to Vegas and all that. I think they're just taking baby steps towards that. But to me, when they expand to 32 or even before they get to 32 teams, add a G League team or have like a G League all 2 G League all-star rosters, something like that.
Anything.
And have them to get to 32, do single elimination. I think that would be fun. A couple of weeks ago at UFC 311, Islam Makhachev defended the belt. And afterwards, it seemed like there was a really strong consensus that he's the pound-for-pound number one in the world. So who's Ariel Helwani's pound-for-pound number one in the NBA right now?
Ooh, right now. Okay, I thought you were going to say all time. That's obviously Patrick Ewing. right now, MVP, Jalen Brunson. Are you kidding me? He's having an MVP year. It's Jalen or SGA. I got love for SGA. I would like to see him win MVP. I think he deserves it. I was so impressed watching him play. Like, he was just watching him play in person. I was lucky enough to see him in Paris because I was covering the Olympics. I saw them against Greece and then the awful game against France, which was just a total disaster. But he's just like, he's so smooth out there and it's so effortless for him. But if I have to pick one, of course, it's Jalen.
I think Jalen Brunson's a good pick.
Yeah, I do. Thank you.
SGA would be the other one. You know, he's what, 6'4", 6'5". Brunson's 6 feet-ish, something like that.
I wish he was just a little better at defense, just a little better.
I know. Then that's where I'd give SGA the edge, and he'd be my selection because he's also a great defender.
Yeah.
He's one of the reasons why OKC has a top-ranked defense this season by far. It's not just offense. That's part of the reason for him being the leading MVP right now, even over Jokic. So I'd go with SGA for that question. But Brunson's, you know, top three.
I'm biased. Yeah.
And it's a good choice. He's 6 feet and he dominates on offense. It's a really good one. What real NBA beef do you wish could get settled in the octagon?
Ooh. I was just watching Dwight Howard with Carmelo on his show. I like that show, 7 p.m. in Brooklyn. And he was talking about his beef with Shaq. Could you imagine Dwight Howard versus Shaq?
Oh, my God.
In the octagon, those two behemoths. Going toe-to-toe. You know what? Give me Karl Anthony Towns against Draymond Green. Let's see how he does against Kat. I'll take Kat's long arms. He's got that reach. He's got that size. I think Draymond's crazy, though. Draymond's a Twitter tough guy.
Is he?
He ain't no real tough guy.
He chokes Rudy Gobert, kicking Steven Adams.
Yeah. Kat could take him. Kat's from the Dominican Republic, the mean streets. He could take him.
I would love to see it, though.
Yeah. You know what? Basketball players, like, I've seen footage of them. There was one time where the Rockets went to the UFCPI, which is like their Performance Institute in Vegas. And this was the Westbrook Harden Rockets. And they were hitting the bag. And I was like, wow, these are some of the most talented athletic people on the planet. And they have no idea what to do. Like, I'm not saying I'm not an NBA player dunking and doing these like incredible things. And they're so stiff. They have no idea how to punch. It's amazing that they could be so good at one thing and so bad at another. And conversely, I've seen footage of fighters like John Jones, who a lot of people consider the greatest of all time, honestly have no idea how to shoot a basketball. McGregor too. Like they shoot it like they're in fifth grade gym class and they just picked up a ball for the first time.
Or like Sean Marion. That's like Sean Marion shooting motion.
it's wild. It's wild. So
are any of them really good basketball players?
There's a guy named Cyril Gane who's French, who he's from France, and I'd say he's probably like 6'4", 6'5". He's incredible. I've seen footage of him playing basketball and he's fantastic. So there are some guys here and there, but for the most part with MMA fighters, like a lot of them played football or wrestled in high school and college. Not a ton of basketball. There's a guy named Corey Sandhagen from Colorado who's really good. Benson Henderson, really good. But for the most part, not a lot of standouts.
You mentioned that fighter who's 6'4". Made me think about how at a Sixers game the other day, there were some Eagles players and like Tyrese Maxey just towering over A.J. Brown. Like A.J. Brown feels huge on the football field. But it's just basketball players are so tall.
Oh, my God.
It's crazy to see the same thing with MMA, I'm sure.
Yep. Like LeBron would be an incredible. I would love to see LeBron. Like you don't realize just how big he is. I mean, the guy is a heavyweight. Like what does LeBron walk around at? 250, 260, something like that?
Allegedly. Might be heavier than that.
Might be heavier than that. That's the heavyweight limit. 265 is the heavyweight limit. And he's so tall and slender. Could you imagine a guy like him, whatever he is, 6'7", 6'8", at 265 would be insane. That would be incredible. But he probably can't punch like all of them.
I'm hopeful for your Knicks over the Bills, man. I mean, it's sad about the Bills. I was rooting for the Bills. What's your take on the controversy? Ben Solak over at ESPN made a post about Josh Allen should have spun out of that last throw rather than throw it to Kincaid. Do you have a thought on that?
Well, I mean, I have a lot of thoughts. First of all, I adore Josh Allen. If he was in front of me right now, it would be hard not to like propose to him. I adore him so much. I it's like a little uncomfortable how much I love this man, and so I would defend him until the end of days. I saw Ryan Fitzpatrick, who I adore as well, Fitzmagic, weigh in on this. It's like, look, man, you're sitting at home, and I'm not one of these guys who's like you can't talk about the game unless you played the game. But it's very easy to be like, oh, you should have gone this way when you're just looking at your computer and the shot is from here. Like he had four or five guys just bum rushing him and he had nowhere to go. And yes, should he have gone the other way? Absolutely. But you see how fast that whole thing materialized? The fact that he even got the pass off and even made it to Kincaid was a miracle.
Should have been caught.
It should have been caught. That's the real takeaway. Mm-hmm. And who knows, would Shakir have even gotten the first down? I mean, it seems like he would have, but the truth is about that game, like, I know this isn't a football pod, but I think we just got outcoached. And so that's why it's hard for me to say that about McDermott. One second, I'm getting emotional. Cool. It's hard for me to say that about McDermott, but I really do think that he got outcoached. And you would appreciate this analogy, and I've been saying it to a lot of my friends who are football fans. To me, the Bills feel like the 2018 Toronto Raptors. 2018 Toronto Raptors had Dwayne Casey, Coach of the Year, but what happened? They kept meeting the Cavs and losing to the Cavs. And Masai Ujiri had to make a tough call, and he had to fire Dwayne Casey, and he elevated Nick Nurse. And yes, of course, acquiring Kawhi Leonard helped. But sometimes you have to make those calls, and sometimes you have to recognize that a coach has taken you as far as he can take you. And at the time, as you will remember, everyone thought that was insane to fire a coach of the year. And look how it panned out. So I don't think it's going to happen, but there's a part of me that thinks they would be better off.
I mean, he's been with the Bills for how long now?
It's probably been since 17 or 16 off the top of my head. So almost 10 years.
Yeah, that's a long time.
And you lose four times in 5 years to the same team. And oh, by the way, you're the defensive coordinator, and we tend to lose like in big moments on defense, 13 seconds, what happened on Sunday as well. So it's tough. And the Casey one is probably the best example of tough, but you got to make that call.
I mean, I think, you know, in that last play with Allen, to me, the big mistake happened pre-snap, not recognizing whether that's coaching or Josh Allen, not recognizing the possibility of a blitz and having the idea of what your backup plan was instead of improvising. And he improvised and made an amazing throw, gave his team an opportunity. But knowing that blitz is coming, I think is what does separate the Mahomes, the Brady types from Josh Allen, without taking anything away from him. Made an amazing play, had an amazing season. But I think coaching is where that comes from as well, with game prep and some of the decisions that happen and the things that are being said within games. And obviously, don't know everything that's said on sidelines.
Sure, sure.
But I think you could be onto something there with McDermott.
It's hard to stomach when you've never seen, like, you guys, you, Ryan Spoon, Sam Farber, these guys are sending me texts and they're like, oh, I feel so bad. I'm like, you don't feel bad. You have six championships, whatever you have. You're spoiled at this point. I just want one, all right? I just want one. That's
I count
all.
The Bucks one. I got seven.
Oh, my God. You count the Bucks one? You can't count the Bucks. No way. That's not fair. You can't do that. That's unbelievable. That pissed me off so much because I hate the Patriots, obviously, because tormented us for 20 years. And seeing all these Patriots fans celebrate. No, you guys have – it's you could count the Bucks one if you never won. If Josh Allen, God forbid, signed with the Eagles and won a championship for them, there would be a part of me – honestly, perfect example, Kristaps Porzingis. I hate the Celtics, but I loved Kristaps. And I always said to people, this guy's a winner. He is going to win a championship. I just hope it's with us. It wasn't with us. And it took him a couple of stops to get to the championship. But I was genuinely happy for him. I know a lot of Knicks fans wouldn't want to hear this when he won in June. And so the same thing. I think Josh is going to win a championship. I just hope it's with us. If he wins it with someone else, I would be happy for him. You guys can't be happy for Brady winning with the Bucks because he won for you guys. He left. He was upset. He was disrespected. You don't get to celebrate that one. You can't own that one.
I guess I broke the rules.
Yeah.
Felt great to celebrate that one. Yeah, it really did. I'm sorry. Well, I hope your Knicks have better luck this year. I do. The Knicks are fun. I want to go to MSG now that I'm back on the East Coast. I've been to MSG, I think, twice, and the Knicks sucked. I want to go to MSG.
You've only been to MSG twice in your life.
I think, no, twice for Knicks games. I've been for a David Gilmour concert. He's a guitarist from Pink Floyd.
Doesn't count.
I saw Wolfpack perform there. A couple of concerts. Tame Impala, I saw them in MSG, but only two Knicks games.
What era is this?
It was like within the last 6 or 7 years.
But they were bad. They were bad. Yeah, like the Derek Fisher, Jeff Hornacek guys, Fizdale.
Like that. Yeah. And the crowd's still great.
Yeah,
the crowd's despite still great. Despite the team being bad. It was still a great crowd.
You got to go now. It's electric. There's no better place in the world. No better arena, in my opinion.
It is a great arena. Cool area. Right over the train station. Right in the middle of New York City. It's just an awesome vibe.
Could you imagine what it would be like in June if they finally did it? God.
Oh, my God.
Just one.
Incredible. You'd be out there screaming.
I told my kids, I told my kids I'm going outside naked streaking, no problem. Neighborhood, I don't care what anyone says. I don't care who's uncomfortable. Knicks, Bills, June, February. If I can get those, I will truly die in peace.
Ariel, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
Big thank you to Roosh Williams and Ariel Helwani for joining me on today's episode of The Kevin O'Connor Show. Thanks to Stone, Emmy, and Mike for producing us today. Really does help out if you give us a 5-star rating over on Spotify or Apple and a thumbs up on YouTube. Please subscribe. Hope you have a great rest of your weekend. Hopefully you get a fun week next week with the NBA trade deadline approaching on Thursday. I can't wait. I'm fired up. These are two fun podcasts. If you didn't listen to part one, make sure you do that now. Have a good one.